You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
When the wolves bite, two billionaires, one company, and an epic Wall Street battle is the new book by Scott Wapner, the inside story of a clash between two of Wall Street's biggest, richest, toughest, and most aggressive players. Here to talk about it live on the line from the States is author of When the Wolves Bite, Scott Wapner. Scott, good morning to you.
Good morning. It's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you with us as well. Tell us a little bit about then the subject of this clash of the titans. Safe to say that Wall Street had never seen anything like the battle that was about to commence on your show on January the 25th, 2013.
This was really a battle between two of the best known rock star financiers on Wall Street. They were in the headlines all the time. The media loved covering them. They were separated by, you know, their upbringings. One was raised outside New York City in a very well-to-do family. The other from Queens, very hard, rough, neighborhood. And, here they were. One of them was in his 40s. The other one was in his upper 70s. And they had this clash over an investment on live television. And it all was sort of stemmed from a 10-year dispute that had really been festering, a grudge that had been festering for a long time over a deal that the two had made, a decade earlier. And it spilled out on live television on CNBC on January 25th of 2013. And it really was unlike anything Wall Street had ever seen before. Two financiers yelling at each other, hurling insults on live television, and trading actually on the New York Stock Exchange dropped by about 20% because people were sitting there not typing on their computers and making trades. They were looking at the television set and oohing and aahing as all of this was taking place. It was pretty extraordinary.
Get glued to their screens, indeed. Tell us a little bit about, to start off with, the two men behind them. Is it Carl Icahn and Bill Ackman?
Carl Icahn and Bill Ackman. So Carl had been on Wall Street for, almost near 50 years, and he had made a name for himself as one of the toughest, roughest, titans out there, from the old corporate raider days. And he had sort of reinvented himself as a shareholder activist, a guy who would take a big position in a company through a stock position And then he would try and force change, whether it was to get himself or representatives of his firm on the board of directors to try and influence change, or sometimes it could be calling for the CEO to be removed and installing his own choice. So he became that sort of a figure on Wall Street, that when Carl Icahn took a position in your stock and he called you up and said he had a position and he wanted this to happen, you listened. And if you didn't, it was a fight. And if it was a fight, he more often than not won. So he had built a reputation as one of the most feared deal makers and financiers on Wall Street over a 4 or 5 decade career. Whereas, you know, Bill Ackman was this young, you know, some might say arrogant, brash, hedge fund manager, Harvard guy, who went to Harvard Business School. He had a great pedigree. His family was very successful. And he sort of burst on the scene as this unknown up-and-comer and made a name for himself as well. His first firm didn't fare that well, and he ended up winding it down. And it was in that process that he and Carl Icahn first crossed paths. And they had made a deal over a real estate company. And, you know, to make a long story short, Carl Icahn ended up making another deal on the back of that with this real estate company. And Bill Ackman had claimed that he was owed a substantial amount of money from the agreement that they had made. And Icahn refused to pay him, and it went to court, and spent a number of years before ultimately the court ruled that Icahn had to pay Ackman several million dollars. And, you know, Icahn was upset about it, but he was more upset about the fact that Ackman went into the New York Times and sort of bragged about it. It was sort of an unwritten code on Wall Street that, you know, you may win. You don't always win. Sometimes you're going to lose, but if you win, you don't gloat about it. You don't rub it in the other person's face. And Icahn felt that Ackman had done that, so he stewed about it for years. And it all culminated on December of 2012, when Bill Ackman, again, this brash, up-and-coming guy, made the biggest splash of his career in terms of public displays. He gave a presentation in Midtown Manhattan, New York City, and he called Herbalife, a nutrition company, a pyramid scheme. And the stock got crushed. People, you know, watched a spectacle as Ackman went through more than 300 projector slides and told an audience of several hundred people why the company was broke. And people happened to be watching it. And they told Icahn, and they literally started buying the stock on the other side of the position that Ackman had. And it was all done in secret. So literally while Ackman was on the stage bashing Herbalife and trying to get the stock to fall, because that's where his stock position was, he needed the stock to fall to make money. Icahn wanted it to go up. They immediately became rivals in the stock. One saying it was a fraud, the other one saying that the person saying it was a fraud was a fraud.
So the battle lines had been drawn in that case. I mean, pretty strong words to come in, because Herbalife is a respected, at this point, multi-level marketing campaign, and there are some pretty serious accusations flying about how the company does business.
Sure. So, you know, multi-level marketing companies had been, you know, somewhat shady enterprises for, you know, a number of years. The government had investigated them and put regulations on them. And basically the regulations were how much product you had to sell to real customers, quote unquote real customers, rather than just to another person inside your distributor network. In other words, if I was a distributor of Herbalife, you know, I could ask you to come into the business and be your own distributor. You'd have to order, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars worth of product. And if you did that, I got a commission based on what you bought, and so on and so on and so on. And over the years, some people got incredibly wealthy from doing it and made no secret about it. And they bragged about their cars and their homes and their mansions and their Ferraris and Lamborghinis and what you could achieve through the business opportunity that Herbalife had presented. And along the way, invariably, some people lost money because they were recruited into the business. The person at the top of the pyramid made the money, and Ackman charged everybody else who came in after that. You know, towards the bottom, there was always someone left holding the bag, so to speak. But Herbalife had real customers. It's just the way that they referred to them that made it a gray area. They considered everybody to be a distributor rather than saying, well, we have some distributors and then we have some end customers. And it caused a problem, and Ackman capitalized on it. And you know, the company was left trying to explain itself and fight for its survival. And, you know, it was many multi-level marketing companies throughout the years have been shut down by government regulators. And Ackman was hoping that this one was going to be the next.
So, I mean, you host Fast Money Halftime Report airing every day on CNBC. When you invited both these men onto your show, did you know there was going to be fireworks? Did you think there might be some sort of discussion, but did you expect it to go in such a way that's been described as the greatest moment in the history of financial television?
I didn't, and the reason I didn't is because I didn't know that Carl Icahn was going to be coming on that day. I had personally booked Bill Ackman to come on my program, and we did an interview for 15 minutes or so. I didn't know that another producer who was friendly with Icahn had reached out to him and told him that Ackman was coming on, that he should watch the interview, and he, if he wanted to, should call in. So I only learned of all this in the midst of the Ackman interview when I was told that Icahn wanted to call in. So we went to a commercial. I brought him on, and the rest is history. It's pretty extraordinary.
It's the sort of thing that anybody who has any sort of program, being at radio, TV, internet, would absolutely die for. But in the immediate moments after the interview had finished, what was the reaction like? And what did you think? Did you sort of go and get yourself something very large for the drinks cabinet? What was your reaction? And what was the reaction of both protagonists?
I needed a drink, I can tell you that. you know, I was kind of shell-shocked when it was all over. I didn't. Was trying to sort of process what had really just taken place. Icahn was mad at me. He thought I had bullied him. He didn't want to talk about certain things that I didn't realize he had told the producer who booked him that he wasn't going to talk about. But I didn't know that, so I kept pressing him on it. So he was mad. Ackman thought he had won. And the rest of, you know, Wall Street was left trying to figure out who, in fact, got the upper hand. One person I spoke with, a very well-known hedge fund manager in New York City, told me that he thought they both lost because it was going to shine a bad light on the industry of, you know, two billionaires yelling at each other on live television wasn't a good book for anybody. So it was a little bit of managing my relationships with both people. And then realizing what had just taken place, and it took me a little while. I had noticed a couple of tweets from colleagues who had said how amazing the moment was, and obviously my email had started to come in fast and furious from people saying what an incredible moment all of it was. So that's when it really sunk in that this was a moment, and moments on live television are hard to come by, but this was one of them.
So when did you decide that this would be the subject matter for your book, When the Wolves Bite? Because the cast of characters was absolutely there, laid out for you, if you like, on a plate.
Sure. I had been thinking about writing a book about it as the, you know, years, maybe as the years progressed in the story. And I just needed a push. And, you know, my wife obviously was one of those pushing me to write the book. And then Michael Ovitt, who is the very famous Hollywood super agent from, you know, the 80s and the 90s, has been a good friend of mine and was almost an unofficial agent and told me you need to get published, you know, to, help your career, and you need to do it. And I knew at that moment that this was the story to do it. As you said, there were so many rich characters that I didn't think there would ever be anything like this ever again on Wall Street. Not of this magnitude, with so many different characters, especially leading names. Yeah, it was really as if you had, you know, George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Gregory Peck, if you will, and all these other figures who were so famous fighting with each other at the same time. So I decided this was the book, and I went to an agent, and I came up with a pitch and got fortunate enough to sell the book.
What do you think the book will teach those who perhaps aren't up to speed with the daily goings on in Wall Street? Do you think it's a good reflection of Wall Street's standard business practices, or do you think that these two characters are so colourful and the whole chapter, the whole fight over Herbalife, and I won't give away the ending because people are going to read the book and whatever, is so out there that it doesn't really reflect a normal, if such a thing exists, day in the life of the financial markets?
You know, I think it's with any other line of work, or I think it's a simple characteristics that define this story: power, greed, money, and revenge. And they all played a role that these individuals have more money than most people, but their motives were all fueled by those characteristics that we all possess in some form or fashion, you know, in certain aspects of our lives. And this just happened to be the match that lit this particular flame. And maybe the Wall Street angle of it was just understanding how far some people are willing to go to win at all costs.
We're all familiar
and
with...
And this was a good example of that.
We're all familiar with Wall Street, Wolf of Wall Street. This, of course, is on a... It's the case of the truth can be stranger than fiction, as you said, as people will fight personal battles in public.
Yeah, it really is, you know, transformed sort of what normal business practices would be. But it just showed you the kind of personal animosity that had existed between these two people for so long. At the end of the day, it was about money, you know, and it was about arrogance. Icahn felt that Ackman had been arrogant and broke the code when he got his judgment years earlier. And, you know, revenge can fester for a long time. And it was the right opportunity for it to come out.
What did you let either Icahn or Ackman know you were writing this, or it, you know, is the first they've going to know about it? The book's out on the 24th of April. Is it?
No, they both participated in the book, as did Herbalife. So I feel as though you are going to get the truest perspective yet, and the most real of exactly what happened, because the people who were in the room at the time are the ones who participated in this book, and then numerous others as well who played roles.
Just the question I've got to ask. Just the question I've got to ask there. I mean, has time mellowed the two protagonists?
Maybe a bit, but I don't think you're ever going to have, you know, Bill Ackman and Carl Icahn having Thanksgiving dinner together. But yeah, over time heals wounds, but I think both are somewhat tired of feuding with each other. But there are moments here and there where it comes back out into the spotlight. And there was, you know, a little dust-up last week. So I always think it's going to be under the surface there. You know, these guys are going to forever be linked because of this particular case. So I don't think they'll ever publicly feud again, but I don't think they'll be, you know, the best of friends anytime soon either.
some people might think that working in the financial markets, reporting in the financial markets, isn't perhaps the most exhilarating of presenting or journalistic jobs. But a case like this, a story like this, just goes to prove that wrong. Surely there's more drama, excitement, and intrigue happening in the corridors of Wall Street than there perhaps in the corridors of Washington.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It is, you know, I've been reporting on the floor of the stock exchange at the most crazy of times. There's a lot of drama following what, you know, we approach as almost a sporting event. You're following a live sporting event as it unfolds every day. But this one was one of those things that, you know, makes you feel you're in a pretty special place. You have access to the people who make the world move, make money move. It's a good seat to be in.
I think by any standard, January 25th, 2013 is going to be the financial markets JFK I was there moment for anybody who was fortunate enough to be watching your program.
You know, I sure think it's going to live on. And that was one of the emails I got right after it was over. A friend of mine, a colleague, sent me an email and said, this will live on. And I truly believe it will, because I do not believe that we will ever see anything like it again. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book in the first place.
The book is called When the Wolves Bite, Two Billionaires, One Company, and an Epic Wall Street Battle. It's by Scott Wapner. It's out now on Public Affairs. Scott, if people want to find out more about you and the story itself, obviously you do the social media thing and the website thing.
I do. You can follow me at Scott Wapner, CNBC, on Twitter. CNBC.com has a good deal of information about what we do and about me personally. So they can check that out there.
And having got this one, as your friend said, Ortiz said, and published one for your profile, are you now in the market for doing a second book, do you think?
I've actually been thinking about it, but I'm just not sure what to do yet. I wouldn't mind doing one in the future, but it has to be the right story. This was the right story for me. I lived this as much as I reported it. So it was the natural thing to do. We'll see what the next one is.
We'll look forward to that. Scott Wapner, thanks for your time today.
Thank you for yours.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Springhill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.